Appeal 12-3372, CFTC versus Worth Bullion Group. It's going to be Mr. Osfeld. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This appeal boils down to one question. What is a consumer finance institution within the meaning of the Right to Financial Privacy Act? The notice and challenge provisions of the statute apply to financial institutions, the definition of which consists of a list of 10 categories of entities, the last of which is consumer finance institution. That phrase is not further defined by the statute, and prior to this case, there was not a single case determining what it means. Our view is essentially that the words mean what they say. A consumer finance institution is an institution that provides financing to consumers. That is supported by the Black's Law Dictionary definition of a consumer finance company as a non-bank company that deals directly with consumers in extending credit.
Now, do any of the defendants provide financing for purposes other than funding the purchase of products that the companies themselves sell? In other words, could I borrow money from Worth or Minco to buy gold from someone else?
Your Honor, I can't speak to Minco on that. Worth provides financing not just for the purchase of its own precious metals, but in the precious metals market generally. Unfortunately, there's not evidence in the record one way or the other on its lending practices outside of its customers. But it is my understanding, as this issue came up in the appellate briefs, that as a matter of fact, Worth does provide financing to the public at large in connection with the precious metals market. Its limitation is it only does it in the precious metals area.
Can you give me any sort of a percentage on that?
No, Your Honor, I don't have that data, and it's not in the record, I'm afraid.
Because according to your briefing, financing provides 80 to 90% of the revenues of Worth and Minco.
80%, sorry.
What I was wondering is, what if that number were less than 50%? What if it were less than 10%? In other words, how much of a company's business must consist of financing in order to classify it as a consumer finance institution?
Well, Your Honor, I don't. I would hesitate to try to give a numerical threshold to that to answer that question. But I do think clearly we're dealing with a situation where the company needs to have financing be a pretty substantial and regular part of its business to qualify as a consumer finance institution. But I would note parenthetically, Your Honor, that the reason the CFTC is interested in my clients, the reason they're asserting jurisdiction under the Commodity Exchange Act, is because of the substantial amount of financing that these companies provide. So the source of the inquiry here is the financing business that that Worth and Minco and their agent, Diamond State Depository, provide.
So you view yourselves as consumer finance institutions, and also retailers and wholesalers and storage facilitators of precious metals. You're both.
Worth would be a wholesaler, Minco a retailer, and Diamond State Depository a warehouser. Yes, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
So, may I ask?
You may take the courtroom and just run with it.
Well, I just was going to follow up on what you asked. Your definition really emphasizes the word consumer more
yes,
than financial, doesn't it? Because under your interpretation, it would apply to Sears, it would apply to automotive companies, it would apply to anybody who's making retail sales and includes financing as part of it. Is that right?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. I would emphasize both. I think consumer is an important part of the definition. I think finance is obviously a very important part of the definition. If financing activities are not a substantial part of the business's activities, I think it would at that point be difficult to call them a consumer finance institution.
Well, under this statute, it's really directed towards emphasizing the word financial, isn't it?
Because these
are controls that are supposed to be imposed on, they're controls because they're protections for the customers of these transactions, which I'll use to segue into my next question, and that is, since the protections under the statute flow to the customers, when you seek to redact your records, it's not your interest that's protected under these statutes. It's really the customers. So you're getting sort of ahead of your clients when you're seeking to protect the disclosures on these transactions for the sake of Worth and Mintco, et cetera.
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, I would submit this isn't for the sake of Worth and Mintco, or at least not exclusively for the sake of Worth and Mintco. It's for the sake of the customers as well. And I take your larger point, and I agree with it 100%. I believe the congressional history and the text of the statute reveals that the purpose of Congress in passing this statute was to protect the legitimate privacy interests of the customers of financial institutions. And it's the customers whose rights are being protected here. Our problem is, as the financial institution, if we disclose their information without going through the notice and challenge procedures prescribed by the statute, we face both direct liability issues under the statute, and we face the indirect business concerns that come out of disclosing the private financial information of customers who, in this instance, we have good reason to believe care very deeply about their financial privacy.
I want to go back because I want to make sure that I understand this. You maintain that Worth and Mintco provide credit to the public at large, and not just to people who are buying the company's products. Is that what you are maintaining?
Your Honor, there's a complication.
It's sort of a yes or no.
Yes. The answer is yes, Your Honor, but there is a procedural complication, which is that this issue was not raised at the district court level.
No,
so
but
we don't
let
have
me tell
record.
You where it is raised. It's raised in the three features that are common to, you know, all entities of the statute's list of financial institutions. So I don't care if it was raised in
Certainly,
the district
Your Honor.
Court.
Well, I think the CFTC, they looked at financial institution, and they isolated what they call the three key characteristics of these 10 financial institutions. And we respectfully disagree with their three key characteristics, particularly the third one of routine examination by a supervisory agency, because the text of the statute, you know, supervisory agency is a defined term under the Right to Financial Privacy Act, and it is not included anywhere in the definition of financial institution. So I think as a matter of statutory construction, it's fairly clear that exclusion is presumed to be intentional. But your point was as to their first trait, which is providing credit to the public at large. We submit that we do provide credit to the public at large.
Cannot give me a percentage.
I cannot give you a percentage, Your Honor. This was not
Where are we going to find that?
Your Honor, what I could do is I could supplement the record. If the court would grant me leave, I would be happy to go back and get that information. And we can supplement the record on that point and provide information because it certainly is a factual issue that has come up as a result of these three key characteristics. They assert that we only provide financing to customers who buy precious metals from us. We state, but I don't have record support for the fact that we do go beyond just our immediate customer base. I would also
– It's so strange because that's, that's absolutely, the first – issue, the first question that, I think any rational person would have. And you're saying there's no record evidence of this?
Well, Your Honor, what there is, the Zimmerman and Mildner declarations, which are in the record, they state that we provide lending to the public at large, or to the public. I don't know if they use the phrase at large. So there's that in the record. But what didn't come up below was this distinction between financing.
Well, but the public might be Mintco and Worth.
Well, it could.
In such a declaration. I don't see.
Well, Your Honor, I think to some degree it becomes an issue of distinction because we provide sales to the public at large. And certainly anybody who wishes to obtain financing from us and qualifies for financing would be able to receive it from us. So we sell to the public at large. We provide financing to the public at large. The issue that didn't come up was
for your product.
Well, that's the issue that didn't come up below, is people who buy from another metals dealer and finance through us. And the short answer is we provide it, and I don't know the percentage of our customers to whom we provide it, simply because this issue didn't come up. I think there is an issue that comes up with trying to distinguish based on these key characteristics that aren't in the statute, trying to define us by definition of providing credit to the public at large.
Subject to licensing and examination by one or more state or federal agencies?
Well, Your Honor, according to the CFTC, we are subject to examination by them, and they are a supervisory agency under the statute. But I think the problem, Your Honor, is they are asserting key characteristics that are not to be found in the statute. The statute does not say that to qualify as a financial institution, you must be subject to routine examination or be licensed or registered.
Forgive me for interrupting. The statute doesn't define the term. There's no question about that. But it does list a host of entities that are financial institutions, banks, industrial loan companies, credit unions, savings and loans, building and loan association, trust companies, if you were to add sellers of precious metals to this list, and let's say we played the Sesame Street game of what, one of these things is not like the others, don't you think that you would be picked out, seller of precious metals?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. But just briefly, Your Honor, I think the phrase consumer finance institution very clearly captures, not just sellers of precious metals, but it captures all institutions that provide direct financing to consumers.
Would it make a difference if you were found to be subject to the RFPA? After all, the information they require is required for purposes of a government investigation. Would it really protect you?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Would the statute really protect you?
We are found to be...
If you are subject to the RFPA...
Yes, Your Honor.
Would it make any difference to you?
Your Honor...
Because they want this information for purposes of a government investigation.
Your Honor, we want to give this information. We want our customers to receive notice first so that if they wish to, they can take advantage of the challenge provisions of the RFPA. The ultimate answer is if the customers don't object, we will turn over the information. We want to turn over the information.
Did you do anything to get that permission from your customers when you got the subpoenas?
Under the statute, Your Honor, we're not the ones that can give notice. We're not the ones that can give them the opportunity to challenge. The CFTC... must go through the statutory notice procedure. We're happy to assist with that. We're happy to go through, for example, an intermediary who could provide the notice and enable that process to go forward, but we can't give notice under the statute. We're not authorized to do so. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. If I may, I'd like to reserve the remainder of
it. Of course. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Judge.
Okay. Mr. DeMille Wagman.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. It is actually disingenuous for appellants to contend that they are a consumer finance institution because in the contract that Worth requires all its retailers to sign and in the contract that Worth requires the retailers to use for their customers, and I direct you in the appendix, volume 1, page 202, page 226, there is a paragraph, a short paragraph, which says it's in section 12.1 of the contract, a short paragraph that begins, one-sentence paragraph, begins, you represent that. And what the signer of the contract has to represent is that the financing it is receiving is not consumer financing. It's not used for consumer purposes. Page A202, 226. So it is disingenuous that they now call themselves a consumer finance institution. That's not what the term means. Florida licenses consumer finance companies. That's in Title 33 of Florida Statutes, Chapter 516. Worth is not licensed under Florida. Worth and Minco are domiciled in Florida. They're not licensed in Florida as consumer finance companies. They say, however, that they are no different from an auto dealer or a consumer electronics dealer, an appliance dealer. But under Florida law, the appliance dealer, the automobile dealer, they wouldn't be licensed as consumer finance companies either. They're licensed as retail installment sellers, which is what they are. And that's a separate chapter of Florida law. That's Chapter 520 of Title 33. The fact of the matter is, the Supreme Court explained in the case of SEC versus Jerry O'Brien, and we cite that in our brief. It's at 467 U.S., page 735. At 7:45, the court discussing the Right to Financial Privacy Act said that the most salient feature of the act is the narrow scope of the entitlements it creates. What appellants are asking this court to do is to expand the definition of financial institution so that it encompasses all retail installment sellers. There'd be nothing narrow about the scope of the entitlements created by the law if all retail installment sellers are brought within the scope of that act.
Can you give us an example of a company that would come under the definition of consumer finance institution? Particularly, I'm looking for something that would not also fit the definition of the other entities listed as financial institutions in the statute.
Yes, Your Honor. And I would direct you to the legislative history of the Act. We cite the report in our brief. It's House Report 95-1383, and look to page 95-1383. Look to page 1489, and for those of you who still use books, it's in the 1978 U.S. Code Cong and Admin News. It's volume 7 at page 931. It specifically discusses the meaning of the term consumer finance institution. And it says the term means a consumer finance company, a sales finance company, a small loan company, a consumer discount company. The fact of the matter is, Your Honor, appellants are not any of those. Those are the sorts of companies that they're like small loan companies. When I was growing up, household finance advertised widely. They were small loan companies. And it's true that this statute, many of the terms in this statute are really terms that would probably be a little more familiar to George Bailey of Bailey Building and Loan, because these are terms that are less familiar, less used in the deregulated financial world of today in the 21st century. But the term consumer finance institution is basically meant to refer to small loan companies. And they are licensed under Florida law, under Chapter 516 in Title 33, consumer finance companies. That's what those are. Those are entities that would not be encompassed by the other nine entities described in the definition of financial institution.
Can you tell us the goal of the investigation that the agency wanted to undertake or was seeking to undertake here?
The investigation that
generated the subpoenas?
What was our concern?
Right. What's your investigation?
What we want to find out is whether Worth and the companies affiliated with them, they sell precious metal. We want to find out whether they're actually able to deliver to the customers the metal that the customers are buying. Normally, when a customer buys precious metal, this is ingots of bars of gold, the customer does not take delivery of the gold.
It's not cash and carry.
It's not cash and carry. The gold is in a depository institution such as the one operated by Diamond State, and delivery occurs when metal that's in Worth's account is directly transferred to a sub-account created in the name of the customer. What the commission wants to find out is whether Worth actually has the metal it's selling to the customers. Because the customers never take delivery of the metal, they cannot know whether the metal they are buying even exists. Now to find that out, what the commission is trying to do is to get appellants' customer records. And that way, the commission can trace the transaction all the way through from the time when the customer places the order until delivery supposedly occurs through the creation of a sub-account. But they block our investigation by deleting the names and identifying information from the responsive documents. It's only through the names. They assign an account number to each account, and they've left the account numbers in. But apparently Diamond State assigns a different account number at the depository level. So it's very difficult for the commission to trace the transactions all the way through and to make sure that when the customer makes a purchase, there's actually delivery at the end of the road.
And I take it that this is a standard investigative procedure by the commission.
It is, Your Honor.
And in these categories of transactions?
It is, Your Honor, and it's pursuant to the Commission's authority to issue these investigatory sorts of subpoenas. We served them on appellants, and they have refused to comply. And we even suggested to them that we could give them the certification that's described in Section 3413H, indicating there's an exception there that indicates that when an agency is investigating not customers but the institution itself, the restrictions of the statute do not apply. But they have indicated to us that they will not, even if we give them such a certificate, they will not comply because they read the statute to suggest that even if we provide them with that certification, even if we invoke the exemption, they will still require us to notify all their customers, which, of course, is an impossibility. They have 1,700 customers. We don't even know who those customers are.
I gather, in your view, that reads that particular statutory section out of the code.
Beg your pardon?
I must be having trouble.
No, Your Honor.
I guess that simply would read Section 3413H out of the code, as far as you're concerned.
Yeah, as far as we're concerned, it would. They say that, well, no, it would still, what it would do is it would allow the Commission to avoid the provision of 3412. 3412 of the Act restricts the transfer of information. Once an agency gets information pursuant to an investigation, it restricts the extent to which it can transfer it to another agency. And they say that the exception reads that transfer provision out of the Act. It allows the government to get around that. But that's an absurd reading because the exception itself, 3413H, if you look at subparagraph 4, that has its own transfer restriction provision. So from there, in their point of view, in their interpretation of the section, in their interpretation of the section, the only function of the exception in 3413H is to replace the transfer restrictions of 3412 with a virtually identical transfer restriction in 3413H4. That's just simply absurd. The legislative history of the Act explains what that exemption, what the exception means. And again, I would direct the court to the legislative history. It's in the same report, 95-1383, this time at page 227, and it's in U.S. Code Cong Admin News at page 9,357. It says that when a government agency is investigating a financial institution, not one of its customers, to provide the customers with standing and an opportunity to object would be simply inappropriate.
Mr. DeMille Wagman.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you agree that if we find that the defendants are not financial institutions, there's no need for us to address this question regarding disclosure to customers when the company rather than the customer is the target of the investigation?
Yes, Your Honor. The court would not need to address that, as the district court didn't. We'd love if this court went off and chose to address it because this issue might come up in some other case for us. But no, Your Honor, the issue really wouldn't be squarely before this court. If this court finds that they are not a financial institution, the Act doesn't apply to them at all because the Act only applies when a government when a government agency is seeking customer records from a financial institution.
Your invitation that the court go off and do something is a little bit of a red flag here.
That's not correct.
Really inclined to go off
no.
and do things. But
certainly not, Your Honor. No.
Let me just ask you this. Because this is an undefined term, has the Commission made an effort to define it? How would you define it? You don't like the appellant's definition, so how... How do you define this term, consumer finance institution? Do you just do it by examples like you told us?
Well, I think I actually would look to the legislative history, and I would go for the small loan companies and those companies that facilitate consumer finance transactions,
To a broad array of retailers or...
No, what? No, certainly not, Your Honor. And, in fact, they cite to the definition of financial institution in the Bank Secrecy Act.
Yes, they do.
The Bank Secrecy Act serves a totally different purpose. from the Right to Financial Privacy Act. It uses the term financial institution, but it has a much broader definition. Its definition lists 26 separate entities. Among them are finance companies, auto dealers, pawnbrokers, precious metal dealers. If pawnbrokers, precious metal dealers, auto dealers were finance companies, it would not have been necessary to list them separately in the Bank Secrecy Act's definition. Further, Congress specifically provided that the broader definition from the Bank Secrecy Act, the broader definition of financial institution, applies to one section of the Right to Financial Privacy Act, one operative section, and that's 3414. 3414 facilitates government investigations in national security interests or for Secret Service purposes. It's appropriate for the broader definition to apply there, but if the court had wanted the broader definition to apply to the other provisions of the Act, the provisions of the Act that are at issue here, it could have done so. It could have written the statute that way, but it didn't. The appellants are asking this court to greatly expand the protections of the Right to Financial Privacy Act. That would be contrary to the Supreme Court's admonition in the Jerry O'Brien case that the entitlements of the Act are to be given narrow scope. The district court rejected their arguments, and it doesn't matter whether they provide some financing to consumers who are not their own customers. There's nothing in the record that says that, because they've already specified that any financing is not consumer financing. The district court rejected their arguments. We would ask this court to affirm the district court's decision. Does anyone have any more questions?
I'm out of breath.
Your Honor.
Thank you. Come on up, Mr. Osfeld. How much time? 3 minutes. Well, I'm going to start you off, though, with the question, and if need be, I'll give you another minute or two.
Thank you, Your Honor.
But something just came up, and it brings a question to my mind, which is, as I recall, in your reply brief, you say that pawn shops are not financial institutions for obvious reasons. Well, what distinguishes you from pawn shops?
Your Honor, put simply, a pawn shop doesn't deal with consumers. A pawn shop deals with sellers or bailors.
They're
but
not consumers?
Your Honor, not in the context that the statute uses, where a consumer is essentially a purchaser. It is a customer, it is
not
a purchaser.
Purchasers?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, no.
People that go into pawn shops aren't purchasers?
Your Honor, the pawn shop case, the Winters case, was dealing with somebody who had pawned, not purchased, but pawned a stolen ring at the pawn shop, and that was subject to warrantless search and seizure under state law. The court found it didn't look at this issue of consumer finance institution. It looked at financial institutions, and it found that a pawn shop is not a financial institution. And respectfully, that's a relatively obvious point, because the pawn shops don't provide...
But I would almost bet to no one else in this courtroom, because I see their faces.
Your Honor,
and when you said no to my question, their eyebrows all went up.
Your Honor, it's the reason I say it's obvious is because the finance activities of a pawn shop are not purchase finance activities. The finance activities of a pawn shop are either seller finance or bailor finance activities. They're not providing financing to consumers. They're providing financing to sellers. Or they're providing a seller is providing them with a bailment. They're purchasing from the seller with a right to reclaim within a fixed period of time. That's very different from consumer financing, Your Honor.
If we indulge your definition of this term, you agree it's going to open the door to a whole lot of businesses that will fall within the protections of the RFPA, right?
Your Honor, I don't think it opens the door because of the Jerry T. O'Brien case. I respectfully submit the CFTC is completely misreading that case when they say that it is to be construed narrowly. What the Jerry T. O'Brien case makes clear...
That was maybe part B of my question. But
okay.
This construction is going to open the door on a whole lot of businesses like yours that will be subject to those protections. Don't you agree?
Your Honor, I think
it's not just about your client.
I think this construction will continue to offer protection to customers of companies who provide financing to consumers. I think it will fulfill Congress's expectation that customers who obtain direct financing from their sellers.
That's quite a group.
It could be a sizable group, Your Honor.
You would include all those retail establishments that we mentioned before.
Well, Your Honor, most of those retail establishments do it through card issuers, through card issuances. Those are separately covered under the statute. So I don't know how much of an expansion you're really talking about here.
They wouldn't have to anymore.
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't have to, but I think as a matter of business modeling, I think they would. But, Your Honor,
Didn't the old GMAC sell cars this way?
I'm sorry?
Didn't the old GMAC, it may still be in existence, I don't know, but isn't that how they sold cars?
It was, Your Honor, and I would submit that's exactly who Congress wants to protect when they included consumer finance institutions in this definition. Why are customers who purchase directly from their seller subject to less protection? Why is their financial privacy, why does it matter less than a customer who goes into a bank and obtains financing for a car? Congress didn't draw that distinction.
So my point is that under your definition, it would open the door to a whole lot of establishments that have not previously been within the protections of the RFPA.
Your Honor, I think they've always been within the protections of the RFPA. I think the issue is coming up now, but I would submit for any of those institutions, it was always the government's obligation to provide notice to the customers whose financial privacy they're invading.
Not if they didn't define the term. Not if they didn't define the term like you're defining it.
Your Honor, all I can say on that is the issue doesn't seem to have come up before. I don't know why it hasn't come up before, but I would respectfully submit this isn't opening the door. It's protecting the customers that Congress intended to protect.
So, in other words, the CFTC, which suspects that you don't have enough precious metals on hand to cover what you have, quote-unquote, sold to your customers, the CFTC seems to believe that the inventory may be short as much as $69 million in market value, according to the district court's order. You're protecting them.
Your Honor, the CFTC's analysis is wrong. We are eager to demonstrate to them why it is wrong.
Well,
but
then
we
hand
do
it
not.
Over.
We want to, Your Honor, but they have to give notice to our customers first. Our customers care deeply about their privacy. We've surveyed them.
I bet they care a lot more about whether you are $60 million short than their privacy.
We have no concerns on that point. We've invited them to come to our warehouse and inspect the metals themselves. They've declined that invitation. We are eager to demonstrate that our business practices are clean. We are not selling paper and telling people it's gold. We are selling them gold. We can prove it, but our customers care about their privacy. They don't want the government getting their financial records without them having an opportunity to challenge, as they're entitled to, under the right to financial privacy.
So you have surveyed your customers?
We've spoken to some of them, Your Honor. We haven't spoken to all of them. But this came up.
You talked to the few cranks in the group.
Your Honor, it's not a few cranks. I think, respectfully, Your Honor, customers care about their privacy. Privacy matters. People don't necessarily want the government poking its nose into their financial records without them even being told. And what the Jerry T. O'Brien case held is that the protection comes from the strictly cabined procedural requirements of the RFPA. It's not that you don't give notice to people. It's that they have to respond within a pretty short period of time to avail themselves of those protections. That's what I think Jerry T. O'Brien was referring to.
Now, we asked you a lot of questions, and I'm sure you had something you wanted to say in rebuttal. So I'm going to give you another 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. We did cover much of what I wanted to address with respect to the Jerry T. O'Brien case. I do want to take issue with the CFTC's characterization of us as disingenuous. That's an awfully strong term to use, and respectfully, it's not right. We're trying to be clean. We're trying to be candid and honest. We've produced, just in this case, 64,000 pages of documents, over 140,000 total. We've given them our database. But the point they've raised regarding the reference to consumer finance in our contract that they declare makes us disingenuous, it's not a point they raised below. It's not a point they raised in their appellate briefs here. Had they raised these issues, what we could have told them is that that language is specifically intended to address the requirements of the Truth in Lending Act to make clear that this is an investment financing, not consumer financing within the meaning of the Truth in Lending Act. But that doesn't take us outside of the context of a consumer finance institution. Candidly, I wish that this is a point that had been raised in their briefs so that it is one that we could have addressed in writing rather than for the first time at oral argument. The other point that I want to raise, Your Honor, where they state that we've blocked the investigation because the account numbers differ from Worth's records and from Diamond State Depository's records, Your Honor, we gave them the correlation. We told them these account numbers correlate, Worth correlate to these account numbers at Diamond State Depository. We've tried to facilitate their investigation every way we can without handing over the personally identifying information that we're not allowed to hand over until the customers have received their statutory notice and have been given their opportunity to object.
I'm sorry to interrupt again, but once you got the decision of the district court that basically immunized you from liability from your customers, why did you want to pursue it further? You had the court order that gave you the protection you needed to make the disclosures.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, we're not just looking for cover here. Our customers actually care about their privacy, and
they're
for
funding
us to,
your fees, are they?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
They're funding your fees, are they?
They're not, Your Honor. But we do want to keep our customers. And when the customers tell us they'll be angry if we give their names and financial information to the government, we have to take that seriously. Our goodwill matters. It's our stock in trade.
Okay, now you are going to send us some information.
You had requested the percentage of our business that comes from non-customers.
Right. Can you do it in 10 days, or is that too onerous?
We can do that in 10 days, Your Honor.
And then we'll give you 10 days to respond. This case will be taken under advisement, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
And